Welcome to the Fuel Podcast, and I'm your host, Keith Smith. This show is brought to you by The Advertist, the new business development platform for marketing and communications agencies. For more information about how to develop a coherent and cost-effective new business strategy, visit www.theadvertist.com or find links to the site on our website at www.thefuelpodcast.com. The Fuel is for anyone interested in all aspects of the new business process, from selling to strategy and relationship development. Before we tackle this episode's meaty subject of whether or not to pull your punches in new business given the latest coronavirus conditions, we need to hear from Jeremy Davis. If you don't already know him, Jeremy is our daring correspondent from the front line of new business. And like any daring reporter, Jeremy views the world with an inquiring mind and a keen eye for detail, which he applies, with his unique jaded wit, to the marketing agency world. In this episode, Jeremy gets to grips with innovation and how it can ruin the most important meal of the day.
There are a few things more exciting to a new business person than innovation. It's the gift that keeps on giving. The development and launch of products glistens with potential new business opportunities. Research, brand design, launch campaigns, PR. These days, of course, with the wonders of technology and the digital revolution, there's hardly anything that can't in some way be augmented by technology. But just because it can, it doesn't always mean it should be. Let me give you, for instance, consider, if you will, the all-inclusive breakfast buffet. Now, obviously, travel and tourism has benefited hugely from the advent of technology, and the consumer experience in these days of TripAdvisor, online check-in, and speedy boarding is undeniably better for it. But the breakfast buffet is one place where things have gone too far. Don't believe me? Well, take the simple act of making a piece of toast. Now, I'm no Luddite, but I don't think the humble domestic toaster can be improved upon. Certainly not by one of these industrial-sized toast factories you get in hotels these days. The kind of contraption that looks like something out of a Dr. Seuss book and should be called something like the Toastmaster 2000. It's enough to put you off altogether, but sometimes, on even the most gastronomically extravagant holiday, you crave the simple pleasure of a piece of toast. And so you approach the Toastmaster 2000, slice of bread in your hand, and gingerly place it into the rotisserie, and watch as it slowly, oh so slowly, disappears into the innards of the machine. Time passes. The seasons change, empires rise and fall, and eventually your slice of bread drops limply into your eager hands, and it's slightly warm to the touch. Disappointed, but still bewitched by tantalizing visions of crisp, golden toast just like you used to get as a kid, you stick it back in and settle down to wait once more. More time passes. Hell freezes over. But eventually, your slice of toast reappears, and it's burned blacker than the darkest night. Chastened and disappointed, you make your way back to your table, pausing to pick up extra sachets of butter in the hope of disguising the taste of charcoal, and wishing that just for once, technology had left well enough alone, and reflecting, as a salesperson, that features and benefits don't always match up.
Using this time to, which we'll come on to, kind of really getting yourselves organized, but not just getting your new business tools together, it's a real chance to actually implement the new business strategies you always wish you could, but rarely have time to do.
In this episode of the Fuel Podcast, we catch up with Lucy Snell and Katie Horvath of Cherry. Cherry is a strategic new business consultancy. Founded in 2004, Cherry is a team of strategists, mentors, marketers, and project managers that specializes in marketing and communications agency growth. Now, I've known Lucy and Katie for quite a few years now, and they have a great reputation in the world of new business because they can handle every aspect of the task, from strategy, content creation, mentoring and training, through to networking and event management. I wanted to have them on the show because they have a very compelling point of view when it comes to whether or not companies need to pull back on their new business activity, given the fact that the entire world is on lockdown. This show is one you'll want to listen to if you're debating what your next new business steps are. So without further ado, and with as little of my waffling as possible, let's jump into the interview, which took place on the eve of the Easter bank holiday.
I've already made about
20 mistakes. So is it?
Yeah, well, they're going to get better, aren't they, over time?
Of course they will. We'll by the end of it, but in about 5 years' time, we'll be totally professional. We'll have this nailed down. But okay, so today we've got double the talent for the money with new business experts, Lucy Snell and Katie Horvath, who make up two sides of the coin that is Cherry Business Consulting. Now, Cherry, aside from being an absolute pip of a name, is a strategic consultancy that specializes in marketing and communications agency growth. In short, Lucy and Katie help agencies develop a full suite of new business activity. So welcome to you both. Firstly, I hope you're both fitting well.
Yes, we're good. Been enjoying the sunshine, thank you, which is lovely over here, actually. Nice change.
You're in the south coast, I take it.
Yes, both of us, based down near Brighton.
Lovely.
Yeah, we both are. looking forward to the bank holiday weekend already, Keith.
Well, by the time this goes out, it'll all be over.
Yeah, quite.
But so when we first spoke about doing this, I said that the original objective of the podcast, of the Fuel podcast, was to demonstrate how various business leaders in different sectors go about generating new clients. But obviously, all that's now gone out the window with the blessed virus, and because everybody's business suddenly has ground to a halt. Or did it? And what I wanted to do was just paraphrase a very typical email I received from a concerned business developer, and I'm not making this up, and it's not the first of its kind, but they basically said they're pausing their current new business activity and looking at new areas that may be less affected by the pandemic, and could I make any recommendations? Now, I can't, but could you? Is there life out there? And if so, where do we find it?
Yes, for sure. I mean, I think it's wise to kind of immediately pause stuff and just reflect and review what what you've been doing and what you should be doing. Mm-hmm. Because especially if you've got any automated campaigns that have been going out, you really want to make sure that they are not hitting the wrong tone. But there's definitely lots of stuff that agencies can be doing, and actually that agencies should be doing, because new business has always been a long-term process. And if you stop the tap now and turn it off, then when things do pick up, you're going to be right back at square one. So there's definitely lots that we can recommend, and we can go through some of that now.
Sure.
I agree, Lucy. And just to jump in further, Keith, when I think, although business is difficult now, you know, we're probably looking at a lot of agencies, anecdotally, we're hearing maybe are down around 20% in terms of billings and revenue. Now, obviously, it depends which sector you're operating in right now. If you're in live events, that's very much a hold situation for now, particularly as they redefine what their offer may be in these extraordinary times. Mm-hmm. But I just to echo what Lucy was saying, I think it's just doing things perhaps differently, using this time to, which we'll come on to, kind of really getting yourselves organized, but not just getting your new business tools together. It's a real chance to actually implement the new business strategies you always wish you could, but rarely have time to do. If you look at your plans, actually, I think hilariously, you'd find most agencies now stand a great chance of actually delivering their full new business plan in terms of having their year mapped out, their campaigns, their comms journey in terms of PR, their marketing, and also the research. You know, agencies are always, especially the smaller agencies that perhaps don't have access to tools like Mintel, you know, really expensive resources that bigger networked agencies would typically have. Right. This is also your moment to really get under the skin of both the sectors and the individuals that you're looking to target. So I think it's actually a chance to get into that rigor that very rarely happens when an agency is running to full hilt, because, you know, this is a marginal business, and with new business, often existing client work has to take priority. And of course, that's absolutely right. So I was saying to one of our clients, ironically, brilliant, we have now got the chance to actually put the full planning and research and development time into getting that really robust plan together, rooted in insight, as well as us getting our, you know, suite of materials together, all of the kind of updates on case studies, all of that kind of due diligence to get that locked down as well. Because, you know, another point, a case case in point, these days RFIs are very common and they'll continue to be very common. And whenever anyone does an RFI in agency world, it's very tempting to want to stab yourself in the eyes because the amount of information they require is off the charts. Sure. Now, I haven't worked with a single client, and I've been in-house at agencies too for 20 years. I've never seen an agency, apart from maybe the big network ones when they have very large teams, having that kind of asset together, you know, your wins, your losses, your pitches. There's so much information that they now ask for. And that actually going through that process also gives a lot of clarity on where you're making your money, where you should be going for new business. And then you can look at COVID and the impacts and whether you should be starting, stopping or pausing against particular market segments. So it's that kind of planning and rigor that we think should be happening, just doing things differently.
That's a, you know, that's a great point about finally having the time and bandwidth to be able to, you know, to get your new business program together. Because like you say, I mean, there's so many times that you're always doing it on the fly and you're always adjusting it and stuff like that. So I think that's a very good point to bear in mind. And it's a point worth making a few times as well.
I think the challenge that a lot of agencies will face is whether, because if they are facing a decrease in their income, is that they'll be thinking, okay, do we get rid of or do we furlough our you know, some of our new business and marketing team who aren't income earning, and to try and do it ourselves, which you know, in some way can make sense, but another way you might be getting rid of the experts that can really do it properly for you. And so there's an opportunity as well to perhaps draw on companies' experience, you know, companies like myself and Katie or other experienced consultants who can just provide a little bit of ad hoc support in the right places, just to make sure that everything that you are doing is the right thing.
Exactly. I mean, it can get very expensive on the back end of things if you try and make shortcuts at the very start of things. So yeah, it's a good point. Now I'm kind of seeing and hearing lots of people on social networks saying things like, and these are salespeople saying, don't give us a hard time. We've still got to sell. We've still got to pick up the phone. We've still got to find new clients, etc. But it kind of strikes me that everyone's a bit raw at the moment, and sometimes the sort of route one approach can sometimes come across as a bit brutal. And a good new business person should really have a kind of a unique set of skills, to quote Liam Neeson. And a few of those should really revolve around the ability to read the room and understand how their prospects are feeling. And I wondered if you could just talk for a while about the value exchange that we discussed and how that plays into the new business role.
That's absolutely right. I mean, I think actually anybody selling in this current environment is making a huge mistake. I mean, I would say that overt sales is never, and in fact, I think Alex Kirkpatrick echoed this when in his podcast with you, Keith, is that, you know, you never really want to be selling. You want to be offering a solution to a potential client. And right now, your tone is so important. Yeah. And the value exchange piece, you know, as a consultancy, Cherry has always believed that you must really focus on a very defined target audience and be extremely clear about the benefit they would the benefit in working with the agency you're representing with your agency, you know, and it's so important to give them some value, to be helpful to them. And so now where that was always a part of how we sort of represented agencies anyway, I just think now it's absolutely crucial. It's a step back from even asking them anything. You know, in some sectors where they're very heavily targeted, so for example, we discovered this in B2B communications, that audience, they have to receive a very substantial piece of value. That might be a research report that's relevant to them and their role. It might be an insight piece on their competitive set and how they're performing with your marketing communications perspective on that. Something of real value. Mm-hmm. That's essential to start that relationship. And you must not ask for anything. Can we have a coffee? Can we share the creds? When you're at your first stage, you know, you wouldn't go to a dinner party and start handing out business cards. You could do, but you wouldn't go to very many dinner parties. And I think it's quite a similar, you know, it's a similar analogy to where we are now. You want to be offering help and advice. And that's often a lot more easy to give to those who already know you. So I do think right now a focus on existing, which I know we're coming on to, but your existing people that know you, that know the brand, your lapsed clients, your former contacts, your network, you always want to be giving something of value. And then, of course, there's the basic tenet that once you've given someone something, just the reciprocity bias, blimey, that's difficult to say.
Very good. Nicely done.
Thank you so much. They want to give back to you when they're in a position to be helpful to you. And I think it's just about seeing that as a longer term discussion. And people don't forget you showing them some kindness and adding some value. And Lucy and I have always found, as salespeople in inverted commas, what's excellent about approaching it in the right way is people don't forget when you haven't just, you know, you haven't just hammered them with creds or a very general message. You haven't rushed them. You've generally, you know, you've really engaged in that relationship and added value and been useful. And coming back to the point about having some extra time right now, possibly within your agency beyond the new business team, you know, there are, unless people have been furloughed, there is some extra resource knocking about right now because a project's going on hold. What about also making sure that you understand your audience, not just as a sector, but that person? You know, you can be setting Google alerts. I mean, I nick this from a planner. You want to be charming and less alarming, but to be to look up people and to really understand a bit more about them, as well as having social listening and alerts on that company and their category, you can really send some very bespoke one-to-one communications. And without making an ask, you're hopefully going to help, you know, get yourself there, get those results, but just not immediately. It's just a slower build.
Yes. That's fine. Well, I mean, it's interesting you say that, because obviously I think that these are lessons that we can all use going forward anyway. And we seem to have kind of, a lot of people I think have forgotten that that is part of the process anyway.
I mean, that's so true. And so often Katie and I work with agencies and we kind of dig deep into what they've done in the past, with regards to new business, to find out why it hasn't worked. And so often agencies have, you know, bought a big list and sent out big mailing campaigns to a wide, wide target audience. And the mailing campaigns all very much, this is what we've done in your sector. This is some insight, and can we come and meet with you? And it kind of falls on deaf ears. And so that's why we've always been a massive advocate for having a really small pool of prospects that you can really get to understand, dig deep into research, get to know them, and then approach them in the right way. Yeah. And I think the only times that we would recommend doing a mass mailer would be perhaps if you're running an event and you want to, you know, get quite a lot of people to that event, then you can scale it out a bit bigger.
Sure.
But otherwise, it's very difficult to really add value to the communications that you're doing if you're doing it on a larger scale.
Yeah,
unless it's perhaps some innovation as well, Lucy, in some circumstances where you might be sharing something new, or perhaps there is something that's really relevant. You know, we are also conscious these days of how competitive the agency space is. Now, it always has been, but you have got some through, you know, whether it's AI or whether it's clients bringing in implants. You know, this is a very tough market right now, and it was tough before COVID. So I do think, you know, we have, where we're sharing something new or innovative, or it's genuinely going to add value, and you know that because it's still, as Lucy said, very targeted, you might go a bit deeper where you may send a piece to a sector and the relevant targets within that sector, but then you may only focus your prospecting on a very highly researched, say top 10 or 20 prospects within that.
Yes.
So you get the reach and you get the brand across. You know, when we're working with agencies that perhaps aren't household names, you know, we've been fortunate enough to work with agencies like Conran and Saatchi and Saatchi X and Iris and very, very, very well-known agencies. And that's great because it really helps you, ears prick up, because you're an agency with well-known work, or people are somewhat familiar. But often when you're working for agencies that haven't got that brand recognition, which actually is very expensive to grow, you do want to get the brand out there with relevant communications. And Lucy's absolutely right. You certainly wouldn't send someone some credentials, but if you can add some value, there is also value in making sure that you're giving yourselves that reach, because over time, exponentially, you know, year one, year two, often people stay within, marketeers stay within their own worlds. You know, they might move business, they might move up into a more senior role. But, you know, today's marketing manager is tomorrow's marketing director. And we believe in that long tail process where you might be speaking to that person for 2 or 3 years before you get on that massive pitch. Because if it's from cold, they don't necessarily know you, and they're certainly not going to give you the crown jewels off the back of some initial prospecting. But it's genuinely about relationship building. You know, you're not going to get on that 500 grand pitch if you're not somebody that they can really trust, and that actually mostly you can make them look excellent to their boss. You know, there's a there's a point where they really need to buy into you and to know that you'll be a strong part of that pitch list.
No, that's good advice. That's good advice. Well, I mean, one thing I think that we can all agree on is that not that we're disagreeing about anything here, but is that sort of when we do come out of this kind of Orwellian nightmare, things are going to be a bit different. I mean, I spoke with the in fact, all my calls today have been on this very same subject. But I spoke with the CEO of Stockcard last week, and he highlighted how the traditional brands in the baby market are getting hit pretty badly, and that we could be witnessing a classic demonstration of evolution, like we did with the dinosaurs, when the big ones died out and the little ones that didn't need as much oxygen thrived. Now, that's obviously a very simple summary of 350 million years worth of activity, but you kind of get the idea that there's going to be, going to be a wave of challenger brands coming through with modern business models in all walks of business, emerging fitter and stronger from the lockdown. We've got a story running on Tuesday about a company called Young Foodies, which is a new breed of supermarket with community sort of as part of its sort of big sort of selling point. So, but in your expert opinions, I mean, where should new business people be looking for fresh activity and kind of opportunities? I mean, are there areas that are coming up and ones that are going down?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely, I mean, there's a wealth of resources out there at the moment, from McKinsey reports to Sifted, which is the FT's innovation publication that looks at different sectors and subsectors. And then I can send you some links actually that you can maybe include in the show notes, but there's some really interesting resources where you can look at not just, I mean, there are the obvious sectors that are going through massive struggle now, you know, like obviously travel, charity, but you know, Katie knows a lot about charity, and there's still a lot of stuff that they need to do.
Cinema,
but
then, chains is
yes, exactly. Leisure, but then it's like, it's how is COVID-19 going to impact those sectors in the medium term and also in the longer term? I mean, interestingly, you know, that some of the reports say that there's going to be a baby boom next year, and you know, what you were saying earlier, Keith, about these new companies, these new challenger brands. Yes, that's true. But then also on the other side of the coin, a lot, you know, most of the population now are very massively reliant on large brands and the government to deliver key services. So it's a perfect opportunity for those big brands to really, you know, the big banks and big retailers to really build up the trust that they had lost in the past with some of their audience.
Yes.
So yes, there's lots of different sectors, but I guess, you know, immediately you can think of those sectors that might meet if you look at maybe go back, and I got this from the BBH report, which was quite interesting, but it looks at the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and you look at kind of the basic needs that people have now, which is, you know, they're at home, so their basic needs are basically
peace and quiet,
connectivity, and exactly, well-being,
educating
and health, you know, being able to get food, being able to be productive in your workspace, learning and education for your kids. So, and of course, for some reason, home maintenance and DIY, just because you've got to fill the time of day.
Yes.
but those are the key sectors that are really booming now. But I think it's about taking a bit of stock and doing, you know, there's plenty of research out there, but doing a bit of research into all the different sectors that, you know, you might specialize in as an agency, and think about how it's going to be impacted now, how it's going to be impacted in the medium term, and how they potentially, these kind of companies or sectors might pivot, you know, like charity sectors or travel, you know, in the longer term.
That's it's interesting you bring up the idea of pivoting, is that, you know, because obviously what would be your advice to agency leaders that tell you things like, well, you know, we traditionally specialize in the travel sector, but now that's all foobarred, you know, we want to target sectors that are on the up, like telecoms or logistics or food service. I mean, you know, should agencies perform these kind of extreme pivots? And if not, why not?
I mean, it's a really interesting point. And I think, look, let's be clear. If you're a travel specialist and if you're a very specialist agency that's currently working in a segment that's going to die, that's very, very difficult. Not die, but just it's going to be so on pause for so
sure.
long. You know, dead now, I suppose, is why I'm thinking of it in that way. You know, entertainment, you've covered some of those segments. I think as well, the problem is, of course, is with new business, it's never a really super quick fix. And so you would be better off pausing your agency for a few months in that space, because everything will come back. Business does bounce back, you know, and I've never seen evidence of it. When you see, when you look at past trends, you know, whether it's the 1920s or whether it's 2008, business does bounce back and there is a new normal, and that will certainly be the case now. And I think what's going to be interesting, of course, is that there was already shifting consumer behaviors that were impacting on the way some of these sectors operated anyway, Keith. So you talk about these kind of new young entrepreneurial businesses, those kind of companies and those leaner models have been snapping at the heels of the bigger corporates anyway. But then often when you look at their numbers, they're still not, you know, substantial international businesses.
Sure.
So I think those challenges were always there. I think it's the other challenge with new businesses, when, because it is normally a longer term exercise, particularly from cold. If you're a travel business and you're perhaps looking to take the expertise that you have as an agency and perhaps apply that where there's relevancy, whether it's you know, similar business objectives. You know, if you're a creative agency and your creatives is still strong, you still have that product. But of course, then you need to align that with your strategic experience. The problem is, of course, there will be specialisms in specialist agencies that are already targeting and talking to and working
with. That's the main point. Yeah. That's what I was driving at.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You could, and I'm kind of saying this not from experience, because we haven't really lived through this ever before, but you could, you know, there's different countries and different international markets are facing that curve at different times. So you could, you know, and there's changes happening so quickly in terms of how COVID-19 is affecting businesses and affecting the country. But you could potentially look at other international markets that haven't been impacted as badly or have come through the other end. You know, Vietnam have managed to really contain it, and a lot of Asian countries have as well, aside from, you know, China, but they're now seeing it going through the other side. And actually there are a lot of, you know, a lot of those international markets would really value input from a UK agency.
Yeah, and they're obviously not going to see it too much as a cynical move. I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of expertise that never gets out of the sort of the, you know, beyond the UK borders anyway. So
yeah,
you know,
I think when you are approaching whatever kind of sector it is or whichever international market, it does have to be really led with, as Katie was saying before, really led with value. How can you help? And you know, it's very fine line between coming across as kind of opportunistic and crass, and that really won't work for you
at all.
Well, it's negative, isn't it? So it would actually drive a negative about your brand, which in new business terms is really never something you're, you know, you're looking to do.
Never works very well, does it?
It's not very persuasive, that, no.
But, I mean, another sort of tactic that I like to employ is that obviously when times get tough, I mean, I go back through sort of old contacts and old connections and revive some of those old conversations that I've had to see if anything kind of breaks loose in terms of new leads or opportunities and something. I mean, is that, would you recommend that as a way forward? And if so, I mean, is there a kind of a recommended way to do that?
Oh, most definitely. But I think the recommended way is really just, you know, especially if there's somebody that you know but have lost touch with, it's really just about having it, you know, getting in touch with them and see if they want to have a virtual coffee and a bit of a chat about over the challenges that they're facing, just to, you know, how can you be of help to them?
And just being so informal in that approach, as you were saying at the top end, Lucy, just the tone and the content right now is just so important. You just want to be super light touch. You're just saying, I'm here, and if you do have something that's particularly relevant that you can share. In fact, you know, I think sometimes if you share something and it needs to be completely right for them, of course, but I just think you want to be so light touch, because if people want to pick your brains and they know you, you can expect them to come back pretty quickly. So sure. We've had clients that are approaching rolling out their personal approaches to their own kind of black book of contacts, if you will. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, they're having a 65% response rate. Now, you would expect that from people that know you. But all of those people in some campaigns or some pushes have then come back with, you know, extensive information about what they need help with. And so people just need the nudge and the reminder and the help mm-hmm. if there's anything we can do to help. So I think going through your LinkedIn, it's actually very interesting when you start to drain your mind and your LinkedIn and your email and all of the other places you might have your contacts noted down in your communications. It's actually quite staggering how many people you know, particularly when you're a senior client, you know. So you will be impressed with yourself, with the depth of your contact list. And then you can just literally just tick some off and make those approaches. And before you know it, you've actually reached out to 80 people in a 2-week period. And that's the kind of thing that builds pipeline. Mm. And even if it's at the bottom end of the funnel, if you will, you know, these are people that we've made some engagement with, but there's no meeting, there's no discussion as yet. That will go up towards the funnel as you progress through the year. And those people know you're there. And that's kind of step one done. And then you can come back to those alerts I was talking about earlier. You know, you've contacted, you know, a company, you then discover something major has happened with their shareholders, whatever in news it might be. And then you've opened up the dialogue with your contact and you can drop them a further note once you've got these alerts and social listening set up. So you can be super helpful. You can keep that dialogue going, but still in a very informal, light touch way until they engage with you. And then you can have the conversation around what their challenges are, which is actually much more illuminating for all involved. And you can have a much, you know, better discussion that will potentially lead to work. I think that's kind of how we
definitely.
See it.
Definitely. And actually, I think people working from home do actually feel, you know, Katie and I are used to it, but a lot of people feel quite isolated and actually quite welcome having conversations with you. Mm. Especially if they, you know, if they know you and have worked with you in the past, or they've met you in the past. Mm. But I think you don't just have to narrow it down to prospects. I think it's, you know, not a bad idea to look at potential, you know, past suppliers that you've worked with, or peers or competitors. Just, you know, they'll be open to having conversations sure. with you. Just have a bit of a chat about the state of the nation and what's going on, because they can always lead to opportunities as well in the longer term.
Just, and also knowledge, you know, knowledge about what's going on. I think that all of these fantastic new online ways of connecting and sharing insight, I've never seen so many opportunities for taking a deeper dive into a particular sector, because there's so many webinars and opportunities for you to learn. And I think as new business people, active listening is something that's really important. To have your ear to the ground and to hear what these challenges are is actually, as a new business person, gold dust. And it would normally not be something you would be privy to from cold without developing a relationship with someone. So I'm actually seeing this as a real opportunity to have a chance to get into clients' minds, you know, that sort of prospect pool. Mm-hmm. Because ordinarily that wouldn't be something you would necessarily get. And I just see so much right now that is really insightful, whether it's about agencies and pitching and what's going on, or whether it's about clients and them talking about the kind of challenges they have, not just from a marketing perspective, but from a business perspective. And the business issues often start, and then, of course, the marketing communication challenge will come later. But really understanding that and hearing clients talking about the things they're finding painful now, that will really help you, you know, that will really drive dividends further down the line, whether, you know, in terms of enriching the knowledge from which you would base your program.
Indeed. And I mean, obviously, needs to be said, you know, with everybody working from home as well, it's probably not a wise idea to do that old tactic of, well, I happen to be in your area right now.
Oh, Pete, who goes for that anyway? Who goes for that anyway? Seriously, if anyone says that to me, I just think, oh, good grief.
Just look out your window.
Encyclopedias.
Oh, I know, exactly. It's like, what are you, a Jehovah's Witness? Freaking me out.
Now, I want to talk for a bit about the idea of thought leadership. I mean, you were talking about, you know, sort of the, very much the sort of soft sell and ways of being able to kind of bring people on side. Now, with the word thought or the phrase thought leadership, it gets bandied around a lot in the agency world. But it started to gain a bit more momentum, obviously, during the lockdown. And I wondered if you could just take us through briefly the sort of various ways that people working in new business can generate thought leadership programs.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Thought leadership is something that, you know, gets bandied around a lot. And I think that the kind of thought leadership that is most helpful, you know, it's interesting now, of course, because there's so many unknown factors right now. And so agencies, I guess, in terms of the value they can really add to that conversation now is around their expertise in product and how that matches with trends with the sector or audience that they're targeting. You know, it's more of that sort of thought leadership that's helpful to clients. And, you know, for example, some of our clients are commissioning some research and, you know, conducting some very thorough kind of thought leadership, but in many cases that they were doing anyway. You know, there are a lot of sectors that aren't impacted, of course. And so, for example, you know, some of our clients are, they're producing thought leadership pieces that are around perhaps a topical piece of research in the sector, and they've right. taken that insight and they're putting their spin on it, and they're providing examples of how they feel, you know, for example, clients might respond to that in the Marcoms market now. Lucy, are your clients, what are your clients doing in terms of thought leadership? Have you been using any pieces more recently?
Yeah, not in the last couple of weeks since COVID-19, mm-hmm. I have to admit, but in the past stuff. But that doesn't mean to say that we shouldn't do it. I think it's just because it's still quite early days in terms of what we're doing.
There's a lot of it going around at the moment.
Yeah,
as well.
and actually there is a lot of noise out there. But I think what's worked really well in the past is maybe some trend reports, but actually thinking about, you know, sometimes agencies invest a lot of time creating one piece of content, mm-hmm. and they create that and they put it on their website or they send it out to people and then not much happens. And actually it's about how can you thread that in to your wider comms program. So where agencies are really successful at using thought leadership is they will create, whether it is you know, some proprietary research or just some kind of deeper insight into a particular trend, they will then also run an event around it, mm-hmm. where they get people, where they get clients to speak as part of that event. And of course, now it would be a virtual event. But then they can, off the back of that, create a more of a kind of physical white paper that could be sent out to people. They can slice up all of that content into social media posts, into blog posts, into emails that can go out to people. So it's not just about one standalone piece of thought leadership. And actually, it can be part of an overarching theme across the mm. year. So it can be a quarterly report where, you know, I've done a lot of work with annual reporting agencies, and Radley Elder have been really good at kind of owning that that piece of research, which looks at the top 100 annual reports and compares how they've kind of moved on year by year. And they get loads of people to their event, and they're really well known for that. So you could have something like that would work well. It's about how you can kind of, it's not just about research into a trend or into a topic, but how that really is reflected into your work and relates back to your work.
Yes. People talk about thought leadership now, and I do think there is an awful lot of noise. And with some of our clients, we've recommended just looking at what's out there now and having a sense of the kind of topics that are being talked about, coming back to social listening and just looking at what your competitors are doing. Mm-hmm. And actually, there's an awful lot of very little being said, because nobody just wants to say, do you know what? We don't know, but this is what we do. And you know, this is a kind of additional piece of value that we could provide to you if you just want to come and talk to us about our expertise. I think, again, even with thought leadership right now, it is a little bit more light touch. You know, the thought pieces that we're planning in some circumstances, they're pieces that we'll be developing now, and we'll decide when it will be the right time to take that out to market, because you just need it to be really relevant. And the truth of it is, we just don't know how things are going to play out in the next kind of 4 to 8 weeks. It's such a dynamic situation. And so actually, I think in terms of thought leadership now as well, from a new business perspective, you know, it's different thought leadership if you're targeting that to your existing clients to add value to your existing customer base, for example. But I think in terms of using thought leadership for new business, you need that thought leadership to add genuine value. And I do think there's an awful lot that isn't right now. And so perhaps it would be wise to pause and to do some listening before you decide what is genuinely going to add some value. Because an agency talking about their strategic brains and how fantastic they are creatively, that's just not really something that actually is adding much value to someone. Mm. And actually, thought leadership in an agency context sometimes really does come down to that. You know, it's not really necessarily a substantial piece of thought leadership and what that used to mean. You know, Lucy talks about white papers and those do get produced. But more often than not, you know, it's more informal viewpoints that agencies are really talking about when they talk about thought leadership. So I think it's choosing that wisely, really.
Yes.
And led by the topics in the market, listening and making it very audience or sector specific. And then, as Lucy says, from a new business perspective, taking that content and using it thoroughly end to end, you know, with your staff, with your existing customers, with prospects, and having a 3 to 6 month program using that content to your advantage, and making the most of that investment. You know, invest in something a bit better, and use it for over the longer term.
And it's, I mean, yeah, there's so much stuff now, and there's so many different channels that people can use, that I think that the what used to be thought leadership used to basically revolve around creation of a white paper or a PDF, and that would then be circulated via email. But I think now, certainly in our world, in the sort of marketing services sort of industry, then I think there is the idea of thought leadership actually becomes, you can use all different sorts of channels. You can use all sorts of, you know, different sort of media. So you could record video or do podcasting and all that sort of stuff. I mean, you know, you can use those sorts of platforms these days.
Yeah, absolutely. And more innovative agencies, or agencies, there are, you know, so many different types of agency, of course. And you've also got to think about your leaders and your culture and what works best for you. So, for example, we always say to our clients, so, for example, if we're talking about face-to-face events, which will come back, you know, I'm looking forward to running some events next year, I hope. I don't think those are going to go away. But it's about, what are you really comfortable with? And as an agency, what are you absolutely excellent at? Because I think from new business, you can't ask anyone to make a leap. And that's still true with thought leadership. If they don't know you and they don't value your expertise, you giving them some thought leadership is probably not going to be something that's necessarily going to be particularly engaging. You know, there's steps before that. You want it to be, of course, but we had a really interesting practical example prior to COVID. And actually, I think a lot of things we're talking about and these principles are the same as we would recommend anyway, but it's just, you know, you're just taking a step back as we talked about. But there was an agency that produced a really fantastic piece of research. It was proprietary, it was multi-country, it had over 1500 participants, it was highly targeted to the sector and the audience they were talking to. They got absolutely nothing from that, from Cold. And actually we were so staggered because the piece was beautifully, it was creatively merchandised, it had fantastic insight. But the point was, at that moment, that agency was not well known in that particular space. It was a B2B campaign,
right?
And they were more known for being a B2C agency. And so actually what we learned from that is, because we were all very excited about it and their clients had really enjoyed the research, so, but the point is, when you're taking something out to cold, and it, even if it's a well-known agency, which it was in this example, you have to start by not asking them something. And so we took them that piece, and we asked to have a meeting, a short 45-minute meeting, to share those takeouts, and if they were interested to co-create an agenda, if they were interested to do so, then to contextualize those findings specifically to them and their brand. Now, that's a great offer, but they didn't yet have the relationship wasn't yet at the stage where the client saw the value in that. They just felt sold to, and that was really interesting for us. And so that's kind of why we thought leadership now, you know, still wants to be part of your mix, but it's not a sort of send it out. No, it's not the sort of the panacea. You send that, you'll have a lot of results. So I think it's part of your sort of toolkit, but it's definitely not as powerful as a single kind of piece of selling content that it would have been in the past.
Or the relationship itself.
I think also companies themselves are used to producing thought leadership pieces, especially in the business-to-business and service provider world.
Yes.
And they're used to publishing those on their website for people to be able to download for free without asking for anything, or if they do ask for something, it's just for their email address. So to kind of ask to take someone through it in a face-to-face meeting, like Katie was saying, it's just a big ask. But I think what you mentioned, Keith, about podcasts, and you know, now is a great time if agencies do have some free time to actually think about, okay, where is our audience? What kind of podcasts is our audience listening to? And do some research into those podcasts. Make a note of all that, you know, all the different podcasts, and start approaching some of those podcast hosts for interviews, because that's a perfect way to get in front of your prospects. You know, half an hour when they're on the train or when they're doing their run, or you know, daily walk, to be able to kind of get into their mind. And it's less about selling, it's just about sharing your knowledge and expertise in their sector.
It's
funny you mentioned that, actually, because number one, there aren't that many really good sales sort of podcasts around at the moment, so you know, it's sort of something that we noticed. But there is an interesting trend has developed, and I wanted to share this with you just to follow on from this. Did you know, right, that the podcasting industry, or the podcasting audience in the US, has actually started to decline since COVID? Right, but the podcasting audience in the UK has risen. Right, now what they're saying is that the tradition was that in podcasting in the US, people used to listen to it on their commute into work, which they now no longer do. But in the UK, there was no habit formed as to when people would listen to podcasts. So basically, what's happening now is that in the UK, you've got people stuck at home, and they're saying, well, I might as well listen to a podcast, you know. So yes. I mean, and so there is an opportunity, because there is a massive window now, because people haven't actually got a habit an allotted time to do podcast listening. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there for B2B, and especially in the sort of sales sort of side of things. And you know, I thought it was quite an interesting observation.
And there are some real sector specific podcasts as well. I mean, obviously there's interviews with agency leaders, but I don't know how many clients and prospects would be interested in listening to that. But within a particular sector, within the beauty sector, travel sector, there will be
tens
and hundreds of really good podcasts, very sector specific, and some that will be interviewing leaders and people within those sectors that are worth getting on top of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another reason to participate in these as well is that people, clients, potential clients, really like to feel that they discovered you, that they found you. And so if you can...
that's a good point.
You know, whether it's through content or through participating in, you know, podcasts that have sector or you know, have relevance, but maybe... not, you know, not just within the agency world, as you said, Lucy, you know, it's not going to be about,
Fantasy, is it?
It's not about, exactly, sanity over vanity, Lucy, exactly. but they can find you, they can come and find you. And I just think as well, that kind of rich bank of content that you'll be developing through participating in interviews and podcasting and everything else also adds to this kind of war chest of new business intelligence that will be really helpful for your marketeers and your new business developers when the taps go back on. You know, the kind of relationships you might develop through that as well. You know, new business is longer tail, and Lucy talked about what I mean by that is it's just a slow ongoing process. And of course, when you've been doing it systematically over time, those results from cold exponentially grow. You know, we see a lot of evidence with that with our clients. And we always say, actually, within a 3-year period, you will get somewhere with someone, because everyone's got a review or a buying cycle within that, even if you're P&G. And if they're not going for it, then they're not interested in necessarily in you as an agency, or the senior client is there. But I think all of this you know, extra content. It's a brilliant time to be getting that together and participating, for sure.
And if you are generating video content as well, I would strongly advise against trying to broadcast from inside your car, which I see so much of.
Yeah, that does seem ill-advised.
Lockdown, it might be the only place you get a bit of peace and quiet.
It just looks like a drug deal going down or something.
Also, where are you? Because you're not supposed to be in your car unless you're at Tesco or, you know, going to some kind of emergency. Yeah, exactly. That's not good. You're breaking the rules. You're a rule breaker. Maybe that's a good thing. But I think it's what your clients are comfortable with.
Sure.
You know, if you have to have a client that's really happy and comfortable in that format, and finding those people within your agency. You know, if it's not your leaders, now is the moment for the next rank of leadership as well to get involved.
Absolutely. You know, the sort of social media stars and stuff. Yeah.
Or also just your really smart strategists. Uh-huh. You know, the people that can really add value are often, you know, the strategists and your planners, you know, often they're the real brains of the operation. And so they can really be providing some fantastically sharp and intelligent insight.
And your
creatives. You know, we're just talking about your creatives. What about the kind of podcasts or the content they could be getting involved in and contributing to from a creative perspective, because we talked about the changing agency landscape and how competitive it is. But guess what? Clients still right now need truly strong creative thinking, and right now it's mostly agencies that are delivering that. You know, then that's not something Microsoft talked about. This we went to a B2B expo last year, and you know, these big corporates, they talk about that. Even with the implants, they recognize that they need the creativity that specialist agencies bring. And so if creative is part of your product, you should also be, I don't mean to be naff, creative in how you seek out opportunities for you to contribute to that creative conversation. And that's also quite an interesting thing for creatives to get to have a chance to look at, because ordinarily they wouldn't necessarily be the voice of an agency. And for many people now could be their perfect moment, and which is also, again, raises the profile of that, both that person and that brand.
Great
which also,
point. Yeah.
Again, longer term, if you're looking at awards for next year, I think we've all agreed it's probably they're probably mostly off this year. But if you look at the awards for next year, people that are participating in podcasts and raising their brand and profile now, when they make their pitch to go and be a Cannes judge next year, it's going to be a lot more powerful application if you've been doing things over this period of time. And so it's not about, you know, you do have a chance to monetize what you're doing now, you know, because it is about driving ROI. But again, that's something that you can monetize further down the line, because, you know, the people that raise their heads above the parapet now are the people that are going to be more successful the other side.
Great advice. Now, just switching gears slightly. I mean, I don't know if you sort of read this, but I'm a follower of what used to be the Holmes Report and is now called Provoke. And its editor, Arun Sudarman, wrote a brilliant piece recently on the fact that we're all virtual now. I mean, this links into the fact that everybody's now, you know, we could be looking at a change of environment for everything. And the one view of the future will possibly involve all types of marketing services agencies kind of pitching and meeting with clients remotely. Now, as one of the old school who used to love the sort of build up and execution of a pitch, I mean, this is all potentially going to change now. So, I mean, do I need to, if I'm an agency owner, do I need to start investing in, you know, sort of top notch webcam and, you know, and good production and a production set and a decent set of bookshelves to sit behind me? I mean, is this where we're going now? I mean, is it all going to be done from the desktop, do you think?
Well, it will be in the short term for sure. And I don't think agencies need to invest in hugely expensive equipment, but they do need to understand the nuances of pitching virtually. And I think that is really important. And actually, I don't know if it was the same article that I read or a different one where they spoke about actually, you know, in the past when you're pitching face to face, it's much easier to read the room better.
Yes.
You know, you can tell a lot by somebody's body language. And often now in virtual pitches, yes, sometimes they have the cameras on, but sometimes they turn them off. And that makes it even more tricky to pitch when you're just hearing somebody's voice. But it's about really, I guess, for agency teams and pitching virtually, it's about doing the proper due diligence of doing a good run through beforehand, practicing, checking that all the technology works, but also thinking about how, giving it a bit of advice to the agencies to see if there's ways that you can streamline the process to cut some of the costs involved in that pitching process. Mm. I think it will be very interesting to see not just pitching virtually, but actually working virtually, and whether when things go back to normal, will it be a new normal of people working completely flexibly, virtually from home, or going into the office when they're needed to, and not so much kind of sat at their desk 9 to 5 like before.
Right.
I think that would be quite interesting to see how that would be done.
I think that's a hugely valuable point, Lucy, because I feel like with the agency world, some more progressive agencies have already been operating some slightly different flexible ways of working, partly in line with the changes in needs of, in inverted commas, millennials, and younger members of the team, who frankly have entirely different expectations than those who worked for agencies in the 90s, where frankly, they just killed you. So they're looking, I'm from the old school. And that's very much how that played out. You know, sure. Agencies make their money after 6 o'clock. But the truth is, to attract really great talent now, is that you just need to have a different way of working. And yes. Of course, there'll be different agencies that are already doing that. I think it's one of the really positive outtakes of this whole situation, is that for many agencies who perhaps hadn't embraced that, believing that perhaps whether it was a transparency issue, whether it was how they work on creative projects together as a team, solutions will come from what they're having to do right now. And I think that will be very interesting. Coming back to the point about virtual pitching, I think, again, agencies often don't really have the time to properly rehearse. Unless it's a multi-million pound pitch, I know of numerous examples where that really detailed preparation process just wasn't possible. Mm. Let's face it, we've all been there where the deck's being finished and the client sitting in reception. And that just can't happen now. It can't happen now because you've got far fewer opportunities. And it can't happen now because this virtual agency, the virtual nature of running these meetings just means you just won't be able to get the cut through. You will need to be rehearsed, because actually, even when you're doing interviews, without knowing or necessarily knowing who's going to take which piece, it's just so easy to talk over each other. Somebody might make your point. It's absolutely essential to be slick, to be super slick. And that may take a couple of days. And also understanding who's in the room, maybe having a bit of a sense about them. Again, Lucy said due diligence, but just getting a bit of a sense of what are these people are like, because sometimes in pitches, and I don't think this will change, there is a big chunk of that audience who, you guess what, you've never spoken to them. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of mirroring, in terms of using the kind of language and NLP, you don't know them at all. And so that does take more preparation. And again, if you're an agency that's not, say you're the rank outsider on a pitch list, you've been added in there as the wild card. It's so important to absolutely nail that, because bigger agencies have much bigger resources, deeper pockets, to have much bigger teams on this. Of course, they've got the benefit of the brand recognition, which really helps them get across. So I think it's just so important to do all of that.
It's a new creative challenge, basically, isn't it? Mm. I mean, it's yet another format that that you could actually use to your advantage if you were really going to walk the talk.
Definitely, but it's also where your strategic thinking or your creative thinking, or both, depending on what kind of agency you are, that is what is going to win the pitch. Mm. Whereas before, it could have been some gimmicky tool or something that you're taking in to show off.
Yes.
Whereas actually, you've got nothing to hide behind. Obviously, there's a screen, but there's nothing really that you can hide behind. It's your ideas that you have to talk through. That's really going to win the pitch or not. So again, I think investing in training in your team to make sure that they have those skills to communicate verbally is really important. Not everybody has those skills.
Fantastic. Yeah, that, I mean, that definitely is going to become a tool that that all the agencies are going to need to have. Now, you actually have a webcast coming up, don't you? That's going to be sort of helping helping people sort of during this sort of COVID sort of period now. I mean, what's that all about? What's the idea behind it?
Yeah, we do. Well, we recently, at the start of this year, we became part of the Pimento Network, which is a network of independent agencies. We became part of that. And at the moment, they're running weekly sessions to help all of their members kind of guide them through these tricky times. So Katie and I are running one next Tuesday, but we can open it up. Or if it's too busy, we can run another one. We can open it up to your audience. But we will be recording it, so we can always send that to you. Or if anybody's interested, they can drop us an email and we can send them a recording. But essentially, we're going through kind of what are the practical tools and tips and strategies that agencies can do right now to help them with their agency growth through this tricky time.
And being a bit more practical, Keith, because again, listening to what our own market have been doing in this space right now, there's a lot of talk about developing your proposition and thinking about what your offer is. And whilst we think that's completely valid, I think, Lisa, you know, I also feel like often sometimes agencies feel like they need to constantly reinvent themselves. But actually, coming back to the sanity point, right now, to have a robust business, you want to make sure that your pipeline is as strong as possible. And if your offering still stands, unless you are in a space where there's been a fundamental shift and you might need to pivot, like we talked about earlier on in the conversation, you're probably good to go. And you really just need to think about those areas of growth and actually always starting with the development of your existing clients. And so what we'd really like to do is give that those practical tips. You know, what are agencies actually, you know, what's being effective for them now with development? Where are they seeing, where are they seeing opportunities? And just giving very practical advice, because, your strategy and your proposition, that is really useful thinking. But we also think that people kind of want to know, what do they need to do now? And actually, how can you do it? And what tools and resources are available to help you do that as quickly and efficiently as possible? So we'll be providing some free tools and resources and useful pieces of intelligence that, you know, and sources of intelligence that we've been using. Because again, you know, we really want to be so helpful to the community right now, because, you know, we're all in it together. And I think, it's a perfect moment to be helping each other out.
That's fantastic. And I mean, and anybody that that hasn't been to one of your events before, I mean, I know from anecdotally that you do put on a sort of a great event, and you do sort of have some very interesting tips and great information to share. And it's it's always worth listening to what you have to say, because of you've got a huge amount of experience in the industry. So, you know, obviously, if people want to get hold of you, what's the best way? Email or check out your website?
Yes,
or what?
Our website is www.cherrybusinessconsulting.com, and then our emails are just our first name, so Katie or Lucy at cherrybusinessconsulting.com.
Well, that's fantastic.
That's probably the simplest way to get in touch.
We're also offering, Keith, we're also offering in the market, we're just firming this up to launch it next week. But again, coming back to our point about being helpful, we are offering 45 minute or a short, is whatever time you want, but a new business surgery where agencies can come to us with their very specific questions. It's very informal. It's not us selling, but it's us giving a chance for people to share, you know, their issues with this one-to-one, because obviously there's certain things in a certain format that aren't necessarily something people want to get into. But just if they have questions pertaining to the next 3 to 6 months, we're very happy to give that free advice. So we've been, a couple of former clients got in touch and the idea kind of kicked off from there. But we're very happy to put that out to your Advertis community if that's something they're interested in setting up.
Well, that's fantastic. And I mean, you know, as I say, I mean, it's invaluable advice usually because, you know, there's been some tremendous feedback on previous stuff you've done, which is why I wanted to have you in the first place, you know. So,
thank you.
So that's great stuff. Well, look, thank you very much, both of you, for putting time aside. And I know that we're rushing headlong into the Easter break now. So I hope you sort of stay well and even though you'll be stuck at home, obviously, you managed to have some nice time.
It's not a bad place to be stuck.
No, exactly. It could be worse.
If you can hear us shining.
Yes, you can hear a squawk of a seagull. It's all good.
All right. Well, great stuff. Right. Anyway, thank you so much for sparing some time with us. And I look forward to catching up with you soon on the other side. And hopefully when all this is all the COVID stuff is over, we can get back and talk about the original intent of the podcast in the first place. So
thank you.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
All right. You take care anyway. Thank you very much. So there you have it. That was a great guide for anyone currently mulling their next move on the new business front. The big takeaway I got from it was that we should make the most of this unusual time in our careers by getting our ducks in a row and laying the foundation for the inevitable land grab that's coming as soon as this quarantine is lifted and life starts getting into a new normal. Failure to plan now will leave you choking on the dust of those that prepared in advance, and you'll be no further forward. All the links that Lucy and Katie referred to are in the show notes on our website. So that leaves me to thank Lucy and Katie for a splendid show full of help and advice, my co-producer and editor of The Advertist, Donna Smith, our technical wizard and friend Matt Smith of Queegeebo Design, Peter Banks for the music, and you, our friends and colleagues in the world of new business. I hope this show has been helpful, and don't forget, if you're new business curious, then please visit The Advertist for independent, no-bull tools for agencies that have a vested interest in new business. And really, shouldn't that include you?